When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Echo Menopod, the podcast which tackles puberty's evil older sister, one large tub of Ben and Jerry's at a time.
Oh, cookie dough.
Mint? I'm Susan Lee.
I think we have to stop being friends now, Sue.
Do you mind doing the intro?
Okay.
I'm Susan Lee, print editor at Reach, and I'm joined, as you'll have heard, by my fellow journalist and good mate, Dawn Collinson, the woman who helps me take the moan out of hormonal. No easy task some days, let me tell you. On this week's Menopod, we're looking at reinvention and specifically how we can embrace a new era of our lives as we reach our mid-40s and beyond. Because let's face it, the older we get, the more women can feel like we're starting to vanish. It doesn't have to be that way though. Life in midlife can bring enormous freedom. The kids may have left home, we've accumulated a lifetime of skills, and for many of us, the time is right to think, right, what next? Whether that's a change in lifestyle or in career, there are more opportunities out there than ever before. We might just need to know where to look. Our guest this week is Jane Gallagher. She's a mum of four who had a busy and successful career as a writer and a teacher before totally changing tack. She now runs her own business, bringing yoga into primary schools. And Jane's a great example of a woman who took a risk, but is now busier than ever doing a job she loves. And a little later, we'll talk to her about that journey. But first of all, Dawn, don't be hiding your light under a bushel. You're an example of a woman who's reinvented herself in her 40s.
Well, in a way. Kind of, yes. So, what I did was left working as a newspaper journalist and set up a features news copywriting agency with another features writer. So we went self-employed. So for the first time in our early 50s, having been employed since we were 19, both of us, we went to college together, as you know. For the first time ever, we were not employed. Ooh, that's quite scary.
Well, I was going to say that. Now, you say that like, oh, we did this, we did that, and here we are, it's fine. Actually, I'm guessing it was quite frightening.
It's daunting. Yes, it is. Without a shadow of a doubt, there are times when it's daunting. And that's one of the other things I'd say was, if anybody's thinking of going and starting afresh, the fact that there's been two of us in this has been a huge help.
Has it? Why?
Oh, yeah. Just because there are days when, with the best will in the world, and I'm quite a confident person, there are days when you think, oof, I'm no good at this, am I? Oof, this isn't working.
Really?
Oof.
Imposter syndrome after all this time?
Well, a little bit. You just kind of, yes, because you'll be rejected.
Right, yeah. Because it's freelance.
Yeah. But in any business, I think you are, because there'll be a lot of pitching of anything. So if you're... We went on a course with the Women's Organisation in Liverpool, and we met loads of women who were starting businesses. And
not just in the media?
No. Yeah. We sat next to a lady who was starting a cupcake business.
Okay.
But again, of course, in another way, you're putting yourself out there to be rejected. Whether it's, we don't like that feature you've written, or we don't like that news article you've written, which is what a newspaper could come back and say to you, or a magazine could come back and say to you. Equally, if no one buys your cakes, it's still rejection in a different form, isn't it? And so that's the daunting thing, I think, is putting yourself out there and at the risk of someone saying, what you're doing's, we don't want what you do. And then if there's two of you, it's somebody else to remind you, don't worry, keep going. Actually, what you do is good. You just didn't find the right market for it that time.
So, okay, so there are two of you in your business.
Yeah.
But I guess lots of women out there may not have a business partner when they're trying to find a new job, find a new career, be self-employed, whatever. Is it all about friends then? Is it all about having
mates, other women? I think you still need a support network to kind of bolster your confidence, because there will be times when you doubt what you're doing. Mm. Even the person who has the most rock solid confidence and belief in how good they are, not belief in how good you are as in a braggy way.
No, but in your own ability.
Yeah. So no matter how confident you are and how much you have that rock solid belief in it, that A, I know what I'm doing, B, I'm quite good at it, and C, do you know what? Yeah, I'm going to give this a go. Now's the right time to do it. There will still be times when you doubt yourself. Anybody who tells you otherwise is not telling you the truth.
Do you think that's women, though? Do you
more
think
so.
That's women, whether
I think more so, yes.
You're being whether you're reinventing yourself or whether you're in a job or whatever, that more women than men, let's not make a sweeping generalisation.
Probably, yes.
Doubt
and
themselves.
I also think if we choose to reinvent ourselves at this time of life, it's a time when potentially you do start to, I think hormonally, we start to doubt ourselves a bit more anyway.
Right.
I find that I doubt myself more on things than I used to do, just generally in life, not just in work, but just generally I'll think, oh, did I do that right? Or I might a little bit analyse things a little bit more than I used to.
Right.
So again, you're right. I think it's not just about going into business with another person, but it's about having people around you that can shore up that confidence to say, yeah, you're doing the right thing. Now, not the kind of friends that would say yes to you, whatever you did, because they're useless. Because what you want
does my bum look big in this? No.
Go out looking the size of a house. No one wants that kind of friend. They're not the friends you want to take shopping with. And the friends you don't want when you're starting a business are friends who'll tell you that everything that you're doing is brilliant.
Yeah.
What you want is people who'll be honest with you, but who will reinforce your self-belief.
But you know what? There's never, if you think about it, so we're both in our early 50s. And it's, you know, I would be daunted going for another job.
Yeah.
Hopefully I don't have to go for another job unless there's something I don't know. But anyway, if I did, I'd be very daunted. I'd be very daunted indeed starting my own business like you have, or reinventing myself in any way. But there's never a better time to do it, really, for women like us.
No, but I think the other thing is as well, I think you can be too comfortable in your comfort zone.
Yes, you can.
Can't you? So we were in our comfort zone. We'd done the same job and we knew it inside out and we could do it with one hand tied behind our back. And I think a lot of people are in that position who've been in the same job, whatever it is, by the time you get to our age. But yeah, what you don't realise is actually we haven't just acquired those specific skills for doing our job.
You've got a lifetime
along
of
the way,
skills.
You've trawled. It's like a snowball, isn't it? We've got that snowball effect where we've just picked up random skills along the way.
You've been a mum and a daughter and a wife and a parent and all those things that have accumulated in the last 20
and
years.
And communicators as well. We are communicators in our job,
absolutely.
Aren't we? And maybe, you know, maybe not everybody at the beginning of their careers had the opportunities to do something that they loved. Maybe they had to get a job, whatever was available. You know, everybody's circumstances are different. We were very fortunate in that we went into a job that we loved.
But by your mid-40s, whether you're a journalist or you're doing all sorts, you are in a different place to when you were in your 20s. So by your 40s, early 50s, you might have crucially more time on your hands because the kids have gone, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You might have a little bit more money, maybe, you know, maybe you paid the mortgage off or whatever. And maybe you've just got the confidence to go, do you know what, I'm going to give this a go. I have done what I've done for the last 30 years or 25 years. I'm going to try something different.
The time is now, isn't it?
Yeah, the time is now. So I'd like now to welcome this week's guest, Jane Gallagher. She spent many years as a writer before making the move into teaching. But then at the age of 50, she turned her passion into a business and now brings yoga into the classroom. So Jane, tell us, we're talking about reinvention in midlife. I hate later life. Later life.
Oh, no, not later life.
Midlife.
I get visions of Cocoon, you know, the film Cocoon.
Oh, no.
Never say the words later life.
Sorry. In midlife. And you are, well, you're the poster girl for it, if truth be known. Do you want to take us from the beginning to where you are now? Because you've had a really interesting journey.
Yeah, and I think it seems bizarre how I do what I do today. But if you actually look back to the story, it does actually lead one job, one experience, one career thing into career into the other. So, as you know, I used to be a journalist at the Liverpool Echo, working with you many, many years ago.
But full disclosure, we do know Jane.
Yeah, we do. No, we do, absolutely.
So I started as a journalist really straight from university, and I worked on local paper in Ormskirk, came to the Liverpool Echo in 1992 and started started in the news department and then moved over to features, and I love features because I got lots of experience to meet many different people, to write in different styles, and really, you know, find out lots of interesting things about life, the universe and everything. And after a while, I realised that my growing family and my job didn't quite sit well together. I had four children by the early 2000s and something had to give. So I decided that I still love writing, and it was probably time to go freelance. So in 2003, which is probably the last time I saw many people in this office, I went off and was able to work very early in the morning before the children got up, later when they went to bed, and sometime when they were in school. And I did freelance articles for magazines, newspapers, a bit of PR work. And I realised that I absolutely loved writing about travel. So I went on a train journey down to a travel writing workshop in London. I got my Guardian, sat in there, and didn't have time to read it. And then I went to the travel writing workshop and I thought, this is amazing, but I don't think you can make a living being a travel writer. So I spoke to Dee Burkett. She was travel editor at The Guardian at that time. And she said, oh, no, I couldn't possibly make a living from writing.
What are you thinking? Yes.
I'm a writer in residence at a university 2 days a week. And it's a regular job. I teach journalism. So I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. And the way I firmly believe the university conspires is, on the way back, I opened my Guardian, opened the jobs page, and there was a job advert for a writer in residence at a men's prison. So
not quite a university.
Well, not quite a university, but 2 days a week or 2.5 days a week, steady income while you do your journalism, which, as we all know, freelance journalism is a bit hit and miss, and you're subject to budgets and lots of different variations. So I wrote my application on the train coming home.
You really did strike while the iron was hot.
I did strike, By Monday morning, I had submitted my application. And one thing led to another. And I had an interview at the prison and got offered the job. And it was amazing. It was funded by the Arts Council and the Writers in Prison Network. And I went in to teach journalism and actually ended up teaching creative writing, because most of the men in the prison where I worked wanted to tell their stories. Yeah. And some of them could barely read and write. Some of them had doctorates. So it was great working with different levels and making it fun. And it came to an end. It was a 3-year fixed contract. And I thought, I absolutely love teaching. I love teaching writing. So I decided to go back to university.
So how old were you then?
Going back over 45, probably 45, 46, about that age. So I went back to Edgehill University and did a PhD.
Were your kids at university at the same time as you?
My eldest son was in his first year at university when I was doing my first year at
So you're freshers together.
We were freshers together. So it was quite nice because we kind of understood. And at the same time, my youngest was just starting high school as I was starting to teach in high school. So it was quite...
And we're all newbies.
And we're all sort of experiencing things, but from a different angle. And I very quickly found out that teaching English to 11 to 18-year-olds was not my speciality. My talent.
Wait a minute, you've taught in a men's prison, so how hard can it be?
Well, it's a lot easier teaching prisoners than it is to teach 11 to 18-year-olds.
Okay. We've all had 11 to 18-year-olds, so we can kind of see where you're coming
Oh, yes. And bear in mind, in the prison, if I had any problems with behaviour, I just had to press a button and a guard had come.
That's what you need at home,
isn't it? Exactly. Yeah. In a classroom, you've got people... dancing on tables, deciding they're not going to learn, telling you that this lesson that you've spent hours and hours planning is expletive. And I mean, we're talking about nicer areas of Merseyside, you know. Yeah. It was a challenge.
Now, that's interesting, isn't it? So you've had a career as a journalist. You've had a really excellent job teaching in a prison, and you've thought, I know, teaching's the way forward. That's going to be where I'm going to go. That's my new career path. But it wasn't, was it?
No. And you know what? I always believe, you know, mistakes. And I think that, you know, probably thinking I could be an English teacher was a mistake. Happened for a reason. And while I was in the university and doing my placements, I was made a tutor in one of the classes where I was on placement. And I loved the pastoral side. I loved delivering PSHE, which most teachers hate, you know, the curriculum that explores the skills, that the life skills. So when I finished my PGCE, I got my teaching certificate, but I never actually taught. Over the summer, a job came up for a pastoral tutor at a sixth form college in Southport, and I applied for that and I got it. And I absolutely loved that job. My job was to teach the pastoral curriculum, also to support 16 to 19 year olds through not only their studies, but all the difficulties in life that you have at that age that affect your studies. And mental health became a massive problem. When I started in 2011, we had a few students that had issues with mental health that were affecting their studies. Halfway through my time there, so by about 2013, 2014, it had grown exponentially. This affects absence, it affects the results. So it was a way that, you know, I could see that things were happening and life had changed. You know, you've got the social media influence, you've got also the way the working world changing, and life just became really, really challenging for most 16 to 19 year olds. So I looked at ways that I could support my students, and I've always practiced yoga. I started in 1990 when I was pregnant with my eldest son, and it's something that had supported me through life's difficulties. So I thought, I'm going to go away and do a teacher training certificate so that I can teach my students. So I did a yoga teaching qualification. I did a teen yoga qualification, and I set up classes for staff and students at the college. And it worked well. You know, some of the hard to reach students started to come. There wasn't much yoga poses, but there was a lot of breathing and a lot of relaxation, which seemed to benefit the students the most. And then my son, by this time, he'd finished university and he got a job as a primary school teacher. And he'd also noticed that his students in year five were worried about their SATs the next year, about life's difficulties.
They're about nine, ten.
So he asked me if I'd go into his school and teach some yoga. So I asked the college if I could finish early one day a week. And I started an after-school club at his school and quickly learned that teaching children yoga is not the same as adults. So we kind of muddled along for a little while, and then I went away and did lots of training in mindfulness and yoga for 7 to 11-year-olds. And then I realised that, you know, this is to see the honesty, to see the changes, just to see the physicality change from shoulders up by the ears to walking out the door with a smile on the face, that it was something that was making a huge difference. So I started for 2 years. I was doing my job at the college and doing these after school clubs. And then I negotiated a little bit more time off, and I was teaching whole classes. So I go into my son's school and I would teach the 3 or 4 classes of 30 children in an afternoon. And then other teachers began to hear about what I was doing. And as well as working with the children and the college, I ran a couple of adult classes in the evening in my local community. And I decided I was going to run a yoga retreat in Snowdonia. And while I was...
As you do.
So while I was there that weekend, I had a head teacher of a primary school. I had a speech therapist who was married to a head teacher in another school in Merseyside. And they both asked me if I would be interested in going into the schools where they worked. And that was the kind of tipping point where I could no longer manage both jobs. So at the time, my college was merging with another, and I decided that maybe I should try and teach yoga full time. I had my adult classes, I had the children's yoga classes. And in 2017, in November, I made the decision to hand in my notice and become a full-time yoga teacher for January 2018. That was a new start.
It's clearly gone very well indeed.
It's gone very well. I'm now at the stage where I'm at full capacity. I can't teach any more classes. I'm starting to run courses to teach people who teach yoga how to teach in a classroom, because it's very different teaching an after-school club to teaching is part of the school day. But I can't take on, I've had to turn down some primary schools because I just can't teach any more classes. There aren't enough hours in the day now.
But wasn't it scary? I mean, so there you are, you've got a job and you're doing a nice little, you know, yoga business on the side. But then to hand your notice in and to risk that, did you not have sleepless nights?
No, I took a deep breath.
A deep yoga breath,
which in the style of yoga that I teach in the adults is we always have this thing where you say, soften first. So you relax the body, relax the mind, take a deep breath and then move. So it happens in the yoga studio, it happens in life. So I thought I'd been offered this opportunity. So I just relaxed about it. I decided to create my vision board with all the things that were of interest. And it kind of solidified that there isn't really an option. It wasn't a choice to carry on. This is the path I need to walk down now. And
the vision board
the vision
idea
board.
Is brilliant.
Yeah.
For anybody who's never made a vision board, it's kind of like a mood board when you decorate in a room, isn't it? So if you're thinking, oh, I'm going to redecorate and I'd quite like that colour on the walls and I'd quite like that colour sofa and oh, I'm going to cut things out and I'm going to make a Pinterest. This is a kind of life version of redecorating your living room, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a grown-up cutting and sticking exercise. And I've been doing it since about 2008. So I don't know, I'm sure like many families in Merseyside, my husband and three sons are big football fans. So there's usually big matches on between Christmas and New Year. So there's always an evening where I'm sat at home on my own in front of the fire reading a book. And one Christmas, I decided I was going to make a vision board. So I got all my magazines and I just flick through images, words, things that appealed to me. I cut them all up and then I stuck them on a piece of paper. And I mean, there is a science behind it. You know, if you do actually look at vision boards, big Hollywood stars are said to do them. If you read the book, The Secret, that vision boards are quite big in that. Yeah. And at first I thought it was just an amusing thing to do to fill a few hours.
Do people think it's
hours.
A bit, what, how do you describe it?
Woo woo. Yeah. Some people think it is like that. And to be honest, you know, I don't disagree because I think it's the intention. And my intention is that I just want to kind of bring all the pieces of my life together. I want to create a vision of how I want my life to be. So every year there's always a picture of my family at the heart of, because for me, I do everything that to work around the family. When I gave my job up at the Liverpool Echo, which I absolutely loved, was because I couldn't be a fabulous journalist, give everything to the job and be a fabulous parent at the same time. So I needed to find a way that I could do the best for me. So family's always at the heart in the middle. But then I'm still a person. I'm still me. I still have interests and passions and things I want to know more about. I believe in lifelong learning. I always want to grow and to learn more. So I just pick images and ideas and words and phrases that resonate with me. And I still do that now. And I share it with my students now. For the last 3 years, I run yoga and vision board workshops in December.
So do they work? So this vision board. So
I love it. I'm sitting looking at Jane's vision board at the moment.
This isn't video, obviously.
No, but I can tell you that the thing that jumps out at you is create a new chapter, which I think is lovely
because it's
that thing of, you've given yourself a goal there, haven't you? So it's not just about things that you like. It's what you're aspiring to in the year ahead, isn't it? So it's kind of create a new chapter. And it does just lovely things on it. I also like the fact that it's drink tea, which is obviously a good thing. So it's not all things which are out of reach or things which are different from what you're already doing. It's perhaps things that you think, well, I am enjoying that, so I want to do a little bit more of it.
What strikes me about you, Jane, and always has, is that you are very focused. So you have decided you know what, I want to do this, I'll go and get some training, I'll go back to university, I'll go and do another course. Do you have to be that focused to reinvent yourself? Because I can hear women out there thinking, well, it's all very well for her, but I'm a single mum of three.
Yeah.
How am I going to reinvent myself? I've got a, you know, an office job that bores me rigid, but I can't afford to give it up. How am I going to reinvent myself? What advice have you got for them?
Well, what advice I've got is always, you know, make a plan B, a plan C, a plan D. When I decided to do my yoga teacher training, I had no spare money. I had four children. I had a job I loved, but it didn't pay particularly well. I was on support staff wages. I wasn't on teaching staff wages. I had a mortgage. And so I looked around for yoga teacher training that I could, that would work with my job. And I actually found the YMCA diploma in teaching yoga. You could get an over 24 loan for it. So it works the same as a student loan in that you don't pay it back until you're earning $21,000 a year. And you get the money up front to pay for your course. And the YMCA do that. The course was at weekends, the face-to-face element. There was a lot of online learning that you had to do at home. It was called blended learning. That's the type. And then a face-to-face assessment. But it's not one of these yoga holidays in India where you go for 4 weeks and you come back with a yoga teaching certificate. It took me 2.5 years to do it. Yeah. So it wasn't an overnight thing. I think once you've got the passion and the idea, you find ways that work for you.
So don't get disheartened at the first hurdle.
No.
Don't think, oh, I could never do that because of X, Y, and Z.
But the other thing was, you allowed yourself that safety net, didn't you? Because you had a career and you had the thing that you'd like to do, and you almost ran them in tandem to the point where you felt secure enough in the thing that you enjoyed doing, financially secure and you know, in every other way, that you thought, right, okay, I'm ready to relinquish the other one now. You didn't just suddenly impulsively think, ah, I'm giving up everything.
Yeah, jump off.
Farewell, cruel world. I'm off to go and be a yoga teacher. While there's an element of ambition there, there's also a kind of a logic to it and a reason to it and a rationale which says, well, you know, I have responsibilities. I can't just suddenly go, well, this is what I want.
Yeah.
You've got, because you're right, there'll be so many people who think, I'm kind of burdened with responsibility to a certain extent. But what you did was you thought, well, this is what I'd like. I'm not selfish enough to think that I don't have responsibilities. So I've got those running in the background. I'll keep that job going while I build up the other one gradually on the side. And then hopefully the ultimate aim is to get to the point where I can say farewell to the other one and stick with the one that you really enjoy. And that's where you are now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I qualified as a yoga teacher in November 2014. But bearing in mind, it had taken quite a few years to get to that stage. I didn't actually give up my full-time day job until November 2017. So I'd spent 3 years building up and making relationships and getting a following and getting people who wanted to come. It wasn't an overnight thing. No. When I was doing my yoga teacher training, my yoga teacher, Conrad, said, don't give up the day job.
Yeah.
You
know?
And he was right.
And he was right. You know, if you were expecting to go away to India for 4 weeks, come back with a yoga teaching certificate, you know,
and a whole new career.
Well, I don't think, unless you've got, you know, a trust fund, that's going to be feasible.
Yeah.
For mere mortals like myself who've got plans and ideas, it's a long term thing. It's not short term, but it is possible to get there.
Yeah.
And we all know how life goes so fast when you're in your 50s, sooner than you think you arrive there.
Oh, thanks for that. That's a damn note there, Jane. I was all chilled out listening to her. You'll all be dead soon.
Yes.
I mean, you've done this and done it very successfully. What do you think women in their late 40s, 50s can bring to new careers, new jobs, not necessarily starting
their
own business.
But somebody in their 20s can't.
Yes, that's the difference. Because a lot of women, again, will be listening to this and thinking, well, do you know what? It's too late for me.
Too old to start again.
Yeah, exactly. I'm 51, I'm 54, I'm 48, whatever. What can I bring? What, you know, what's my USP to anything new?
Well, it's experience. It's all those life skills. You know, if you have children, it's managing, you know, having to manage a whole household financially, the logistics. It's also about, you know, even if you don't have children, you probably have friends, family, it's not, you know, you've worked in different careers, you've got lots of transferable skills. You've got experience of when things go terrible and, you know, you feel like, you know, you can't do anything about it. But you've got that frame of reference to know that, you know, these are just blips in the road that you can come round. And I think the biggest gift that any older person, male or female, can bring is that resilience in life, that, you know, you don't just give up, you keep going against, you know, when things get tough. And you've got a whole wealth of skills that life has given you that somebody in their 20s don't have. They've not acquired those skills, thankfully, yet. You know, they've got different skills. And don't get me wrong, I don't want to be a downer on 20-somethings. They've got lots of other skills to bring to the party. But I think, you know, we look at our life now and our life expectancy is longer. We're all expected to work longer. You know, you're talking about the very earliest most of us are our age could retire at and get a state pension is 67. So in your 40s, you've still got 20, possibly 30 years and probably even more working life. And generally, we are in better health than we've ever been before. So it's a big opportunity to maybe do something that you've never, ever thought about doing, but maybe that it's always been down there somewhere.
I think what's interesting about yours was what you did was took work skills and something that you enjoyed personally and managed to bring them together. But you also had the experience at the point where you trained to teach English. I think what experience also gives you is the ability to recognise something that's wrong, as well as recognising the thing that's right for you. You were able to walk away from something that you knew was wrong for you. And I think that that's what you get with experience as well, is the ability to think, OK, I've invested that time in it, but you know what? That's not for me. And you say, and you step away and think, no, I'll find the thing that
regroup.
Is for me.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world, is it?
No, and it was important. I don't think I would
if
be
you try
doing,
and fail, it's not the end of the world.
Well, not at all. I think it's really important to fail. Yeah. I remember when I was at the college, there was a great poster that I loved on the business studies classroom, and it was some very successful businessman. He said he used to ask his children every day what they'd failed at. He wasn't interested in what they'd succeeded at, because that was, if you fail at something, that's where you get your most learning done.
But that comes with experience, doesn't it? And
yeah,
it just feeds into what we're saying, that, you know, if you fail when you're 20, it's the end of the world for a lot of people.
Yeah.
If you fail when you're 50, well, okay.
You've probably failed at lots of other things.
In the meantime, and you know, like you said, it's not the end of the world. But we hear again and again, don't we, that women feel as though they start to disappear. You hit a certain age and you start to vanish. A bit like the Invisible Man, but, you know, with better clothes, I don't know. But if you have the confidence to reinvent yourself, to put yourself out there, and it's a big ask, I know, because people are going through all sorts of different things. We don't have to disappear.
No, and I think you don't have to be visible to be seen and heard. You know, you don't have to have this larger than life. I would describe my confidence as quiet confidence. I know what I want and I go after it. I don't give up.
Self-assurance.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Because I think confidence can be a negative thing. It can be seen as a negative thing. It can be seen as a bit show-offy and a bit kind of what... I think there's a quiet self-assurance that says...
And again,
you know,
is that with age?
I've kind of got the measure of me.
Yeah. I'm comfortable in my own skin.
I know what I'm good at. I know my own skills and my own worth. And I think that's what women of our age bring to everything, but bring to the workplace.
Yeah. I think knowing your own worth, I think that's really interesting. Rather than, well, what can I do? I'm 50 and I'm this and I'm that. Actually, I'm 50 and I'm this.
Yeah.
And I'm that. And I'm that as well.
Yeah.
But it's. I think for a lot of women, they find it hard to change that mindset.
Make a mood board. Yeah, well, I'm all about the list, because obviously now you never go shopping without a list, do you? I never go shopping without a list now. Otherwise, I'd just come out with two things and I'm stood in the fruit aisle thinking, what did I come in for? Another list, a list that says things I am good at.
And also, as well as making a list that you're good at, ask people who know you well to make a list of what they think you're good at
interesting.
Because, you know, you might be surprised what you give off and what value. So when you can compare those two lists, then you might be surprised.
Oh, I'm not sure I want to see my list.
To say nothing.
Exactly. Just blank.
Yeah.
I think Sue's good at...
Is it going to be like when people fold up their answer and put it anonymously in a thing?
Yes.
And then you're opening them up at the end. Oh, another one says nothing.
Nothing.
Let's forget about the alternative list. Let's just focus on my list, which says I'm great.
But if you had one piece of advice, because obviously you've reinvented yourself several times and you are here now with a great business, you know, mum of four, things, you know, you've reached a really good place. If you had a piece of advice for women listening to this who think, do you know what, I'd really like to start that process, I'd really like to change things, what would it be?
I would be, you know, have confidence in yourself and believe in what you want to do and pick something that you're passionate and interested about, because, you know, you will go for it. If it's something that you're vaguely interested in or it's a whim that you're not really that committed to, then it won't work. But if you pick something, and you might have to delve quite deep to find out what you are passionate about. I know it's a cliche, the passion, but, you know, I would go back to what, you know, what brings a smile to your face? What makes you feel better? What's worth getting up in the morning for? What would you do for free? That's the thing. And then take baby steps. How, work back. Where do I want to be? And what steps do I need to get there? And then work back from that place and then start with the first step. Again, it's cliched, but that's exactly what I've done each time. And, you know, it might be woo-woo, but the universe is out there and there might be... when you start looking, I think that's the thing. When you've got blinkers on and you're not open to opportunities, they're not there. Once you start to believe that you know, you are able and want to do something, then look around you and you might be surprised at what opportunities are available to you.
What great advice.
Yeah.
I'm off to create a mood board.
So there'll just be me here next week.
Yes, just on your own.
Where's Sue? She's making a mood board. She's gone off to find herself.
Yeah, making a new career.
Yeah.
Jane, thank you very much for your time and trouble. It's been absolutely fascinating listening to you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
You can download the Menopod podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts, but for exclusive, interactive, immersive content, download the Entail app. If you've liked what you've heard, please rate and review the Menopod and help other listeners to discover us too. This is a Laudable production for the Liverpool Echo. You can find out more about Laudable and its other local podcasts by following us on social media on Twitter, where we're at Laudable Pods, and on Instagram by searching for Laudable_podcasts.